This program has been described by AudioVision. For information on over 400 video and audio titles, call toll-free 1-866-966-7667 or visit our accessible website, www.audiovisioncanada.com. The contents of this program are protected by copyright and may not be duplicated or used for any commercial purpose without the express written consent of the copyright holders.
New World Pictures, in association with Balcor Film Investors, presents a Steve Tisch production. A Steve Miner film.
The gypsy woman told my mother.
Soul Man, with narrative description by Audio Vision Canada.
You got a boy child coming.
Starring C. Thomas Howell.
Don't be a son of a gun. He gonna make...
Ray Dong Chong.
Jump in, shout.
Ari Gross.
Then the world wanna know what this all about. What
you... Melora Hardin. James B. Sicking. Leslie Nielsen.
Wait on that hoochie coochie man.
And James Earl Jones as Professor Banks. Jeff Altman, Max Wright, Martin Ealy, Julia Louis-Dreyfus. A young man sleeps in his cluttered bedroom. Casting, Melissa Scoff. Associate producers, Bernard Goldman, Stephen Vaughn. Musical score, Tom Scott. Music supervisor, David Anderley. Film editor, David Finfer. Production designer, Greg Fonseca. Director of photography, Jeffrey Drewer. Line producer, Donna Smith. A stereo clock reads 11:59. Co-producers, Carol Black, Neil Marlins. The time changes to 12 noon.
I got a black cat bone.
Produced by Steve Tisch.
I got a mojo.
A hand reaches from the bed, picks up a tennis ball, and lobs it at the stereo. Written by Carol Black. When a clock radio goes off, the young man throws off the covers. He picks up another ball and snuggles back into bed. Directed by Steve Miner. The young man opens his eyes. Puzzled, he turns over and notices that there is a blonde in bed with him. Lifting her long hair, he studies her face. Lifting the sheets, he admires the rest of her. A guy barges in and jumps on the bed.
Hi.
Hi. The mail came.
They're here.
Both of them.
Holy shit. You open yours first.
No, you. I'll open yours, you open mine.
Okay.
No, I'll open mine, you open yours.
Okay, if you open yours first.
We'll open them together.
Okay.
On three.
All right.
One. Two. Wait a minute. Gordon, before we do this, I just want to say you're my best buddy, and I love you. And if you get accepted and I don't, I hope you rot in hell.
I feel the same way.
Thanks.
Gordon sighs.
You son of a bitch. You got in, didn't you? Well, so did I. Yeah!
The blonde smiles as the two guys thrash about on the bed.
Harvard Law School.
Harvard fucking Law School.
Well, congratulations.
Thanks. Mark, don't you think an introduction might be in order?
Absolutely.
Mark turns to the blonde.
Hi, I'm Mark Watson.
Oh. That night, young people arrive at a large Los Angeles home. A car pulls up in front of the house. Opening the door onto a fire hydrant, a guy wearing two different colored sneakers and a raincoat gets out and heads up the front steps. Inside the front door are Mark.
Hello! Come on in!
And Gordon.
How are you doing?
Another car pulls up with a young preppy couple.
Come on, Brad, it'll be fun. And it's never too soon to start networking.
The woman, Lisa, gets out. Brad checks his face in the rearview mirror.
Howdy, welcome.
Hi.
Come on in.
Hey, guys.
Lisa air kisses Mark and Gordon.
You guys, Bradley and I just think it is absolutely unbelievable that you are both going to Harvard Law. Don't we, Bradley?
Yeah, unbelievable.
Thanks, Bradley. Where are you going?
Looks like BU.
Oh. Well, I tell you what. When you get out, have your girl call our girl and see what we can do for you.
Oh, you guys.
Later.
So the way I figure.
Mark sits under a table with Gordon.
We merge a few corporations. When the antitrust suits come up, we handle the defense. We make our first mill at 30.
He totes.
We tire to the islands at 35. I don't know. I kind of wanted to run for Senate.
Senate it is, then.
The raincoat guy joins us.
Hey, Seth. What's going on? You finished your PhD yet?
Yeah, totally. I'm doing biochem research for a suntan lotion company. It's great.
You guys mind if I crash here for a few days?
No problem.
Thanks.
Seth flops back.
Suntan lotion. I never thought Seth would wind up doing something that's socially meaningful.
Hey, people change, Gordon.
The guests step over Seth, who has passed out. Next day, by the backyard pool.
Harvard Law School.
Mark's parents work on exercise equipment.
All of us, Mark.
Yes, sir.
You know, son, the only thing I've ever wanted is to give you everything. Good home, good education, nice car. I've worked very hard for all those things. Very hard.
You have, Dad. Very hard.
Yes, some might say it was time I did something for myself for a change.
Your father's therapist says he needs to learn to express the child in him.
Oh, shut up, Dorothy. Son, you had a pretty happy childhood, wouldn't you say?
It was great, Dad.
Yes, it was great, wasn't it? And who gave you that great childhood, son?
You did?
That's right. I did. And now I have one more thing that I want to give you. It's the biggest and the best thing that a father could give to his son. You know what that thing is, Mark?
A Ferrari? Oh, boy.
That thing is manhood. Son, I want to give you your manhood.
What would that mean in practical terms?
Well, it means that I want you to go to Harvard, and I want you to work hard. Very, very hard. I also want you to feel good about yourself. You want to feel good about yourself, don't you, son?
Sure, Dad.
That's why I've decided to let you pay your own way.
Mark's jaw drops as his dad gets off his equipment.
Dad, that's a sweet gesture, but it's really not necessary.
Oh, I think it is.
What are you saying, Dad?
Well, I'm saying that I've taken your money from your tuition account and used it to buy timeshare and a condo in Barbados.
He grabs Mark's hand and shakes it.
Vaya con Dios, son.
Tuition and fees.
Later in Mark's room,
$10,493.
Mark stands before a noose.
Estimated annual living expenses, $7,500. Total for 3 years of law school, $53,979.
Okay, but don't you think you're overreacting?
No.
Mark reaches out to Gordon, who hands him a Cabbage Patch doll dressed like Mark's dad.
Any last requests?
Mark shakes the doll's head.
No? Good.
He tightens the noose around the doll's neck and lets it drop. Later, Mark and Gordon read scholarship booklets.
All right, here we go. $5,000 to a young man of Ukrainian descent, to a young woman of demonstrated leadership ability. Okay, all right, here it is. Half of all costs, the most qualified applicant holding a PhD in classical or medieval jurisprudence.
This is ridiculous. There's nothing here even remotely qualified.
Wait a second. Look at this. The Henry Q. Bouchard Memorial Fellowship, full tuition plus $8,000 annual stipend to the most qualified applicant from Los Angeles, California.
Let me see that. The most qualified black applicant, you idiot.
Oh. Mark tries a phone call.
Well, I realize my father makes a lot of money, but you see, he's not giving me any. I see. You have a nice day too, man.
What did she say?
She said they had financial aid for people whose parents are poor, not people whose parents are assholes.
All right.
Outside a bank.
Have you ever applied for a loan before?
No.
How's your credit history?
I just told you I never applied for a loan before. How could I have a credit history?
Inside the bank, a manager prints out a long document. He glances across his desk at Mark, who confidently smiles back. The manager detaches the document and examines it.
One unpaid July 1983 bill in the amount of $5,743 from the Department of Water and Power.
Oh, I can explain that.
One outstanding debt to Pacific Bell in the amount of $7,212.
Oh, but you see, that was their fault.
16 bounced checks from this bank.
Oh, but you see, that shouldn't affect my credit rating because those were just bookkeeping slip-ups.
What a relief.
Well, I mean, it's not like I'm poor or something. In all those cases, I had the money. It's not like I couldn't make the payments.
Mr. Watson, I'm going to level with you. This bank is finicky in that when we make a loan, it is important not only that the customer have the money to make the payments, but also that he or she give the money to us.
I just feel so frustrated.
In the therapist's office.
I mean, Harvard Law School. It's the opportunity of a lifetime. It's what I spent 4 years working for, and now just to see it all slip away like this.
So, if I'm hearing you correctly, what you're saying is that you believe your father misinterpreted my advice to him to mean that he had no further obligation to anyone but himself.
Exactly.
And if I could just explain myself to him more clearly, then he would realize his mistake and probably offer to pay your tuition.
Right! And hey, wouldn't it be great if we could have this all straightened out by Father's Day?
Yes. Yeah. First of all, let me try to explain myself to you. You see, I have a son about your age, and he has wants and needs much like your own. When he was 14, he wanted a dirt bike. When he was 16, he wanted a car. When he was 18, he wanted college. And now he wants a three-bedroom beachfront co-op in Rancho Palos Verdes. He just wants and wants and wants. I work my ass off to give him everything he wants. He always wants more. He probably wants to sleep with my wife.
Doctor, I don't think he
wants... Shut up! You're all alike. You'll bleed us dry to nothing but bones, and when we finally crumble to dust, you'll dance in our ashes and go windsurfing!
Yes, Phyllis?
Dr. Aronson, your group is here.
As Mark leaves, 7 troubled men in the waiting room watch him closely. In a bar.
Go back to your father, Mike. Talk to him. Reason with him. Beg.
I'm sorry, Gordo, but I can't go crawling back there like some pathetic wretch and kiss that man's feet.
Why not?
Because I did that yesterday.
Well, look, Mark, there's a lot of good law schools around.
Five words, Gordo. For you, I have five words. Harvard, there is no substitute.
Well, Mark, Gordon,
Bradley. How incredibly swell to see you.
But Mark, I can't tell you how sorry I was to hear you couldn't get the money to go to Harvard. Whiskey sour cookie. What a shame. But look, I think I can pull some strings and get you into BU at midterm. Why don't you give me a call?
I got the money, Brad.
Oh? How?
Where there's a will, there's a way.
Yeah? And what's your way?
It's a secret way.
A secret way? Well, that's great, Marco. But just in case your secret way falls through, feel free to look me up, huh? Thanks for the cocktail, Gordon.
Brad leaves with his drink.
You don't believe me, do you? You don't believe me? Well, the joke's on you, sucker, because I'm going to Harvard, and don't call me a liar!
That asshole thinks I'm lying! Mark, you are lying. I don't believe you just said
that. Oh, for Christ's sake, be realistic. Look, father's in Barbados. Your grandfather's in Forest Lawn. And your credit rating's in the toilet. But where the hell are you gonna get $53,000?
Mark ponders. At the Bouchard Foundation.
Congratulations, Mr. Watson, and good luck at Harvard.
Thank you, sir.
Mark has dark skin and a short afro. Gordon jogs along the waterfront and out onto a pier. Mark stands at the guardrail, wearing sunglasses, with his dark skin and hair. He runs up beside Gordon. Gordon turns, but doesn't recognize Mark. Passing Gordon, Mark turns around and jogs backwards. Gordon still doesn't recognize him. Mark dodges around Gordon. Again, no response. Giving up, Mark hangs back as Gordon runs on ahead.
Hey, Gordo!
Turning around, Gordon jogs backwards.
Wait up!
Stunned, Gordon jogs right off the end of the pier. Later, on the beach...
I don't believe this. This is unbelievable. I don't believe you... This is really unbelievable.
So I went over to see Seth at his lab the other day, and he gave me these pills.
You never take anything Seth gives you.
It's a new product the Suntan Lotion Company's developing. They're tanning pills. They chemically tan your skin.
Look, Mark, I don't know how to tell you this, but you're not tan. You're black.
Yeah. I exceeded the recommended dosage.
Mark clutches his pill bottle.
Gordo, these babies are my ticket into Harvard Law School. I'm going on the Henry Q. Bouchard Memorial Scholarship for the best black applicant from Los Angeles, California.
Mark, this is crazy. You can't do this.
I already did it.
Yeah, but Mark, you can't just take a scholarship away from some black person.
Gordo, Gordo, Gordo. How many people do you think from Los Angeles got accepted into Harvard this year? About four. And out of that four, how many do you think were black? One. Uno. And that guy got a better deal from Stanford.
So... if you hadn't come along, the money would have just sat there.
Exactly!
But, Mark, do you realize what this means? I mean, you're gonna have to be a black person.
No shit.
Yeah, but for 3 years, Mark. 3 years, what's that gonna be like?
Gordo, it's gonna be great! These are the 80s, man! It's the Cosby decade! America loves black people. I'm a soul man.
Mark and Gordon drive around the Harvard campus in Mark's Jeep.
This is it, Gordo. Cambridge, Massachusetts, Harvard University. Excuse me, but we are now official members of the upper class.
Yeah!
I'm a soul man. Look, I was brought up.
walking to the center for financial aid. The administrator hands Mark a check from the Bouchard Foundation for $8,000. She notices that Mark has checked white Caucasian as his ethnic identity on his application form. As Mark and Gordon exchange glances, she carefully scrutinizes Mark. Then smiling, she takes some white out and corrects the form. In the hall, Mark and Gordon give each other high fives and start dancing. They drive through a residential neighborhood and stop in front of a large Victorian house.
I'm supposed to get the key from a guy named Roy McGrady.
Roy shows them to their flat.
This is it. All right, home sweet home. Hang on, what?
Roy takes Gordon aside.
Something wrong, Mr. McGrady?
Yeah, there may be a problem here. You know, when your mother rented this place for you, she never told me that your roommate was a,
What?
Black.
What?
A black Negro.
Mark? A black Negro?
Right.
Wait a minute, where'd you get this information? He never told me he was a black Negro. I'm shocked. I don't know what to...
Gordon shakes Roy's hand.
Thank you for telling me this, Mr. McGrady. I, just when you think you get to know somebody, I'm going to go confront him with this right now. Oh, boy. Mark, a black Negro. I can't believe it.
As Gordon heads into the flat, Roy chomps on a cigar.
Smart-ass little rubberneck.
In the flat...
Boy, this guy McGrady is real dog brain.
Who cares? Look at this place. This is a great apartment.
Gordon unpacks, Mark strolls over to a window. Opening it, he notices a white-haired man get out of a car parked on the street below.
And I love the view.
He watches an attractive young brunette in the front seat of the car. As she smiles up, Gordon joins Mark at the window.
I think she likes me.
Well, it's your building, Mr. Dunbar.
Roy confers with the white-haired man.
Well, there's nothing legally we can do right now. You just keep your eyes open for anything that breaks the lease. Pets, damage, drugs, loud music.
Mark turns on the stereo, full blast. And lights a joint. Gordon hammers a hole in the wall.
Hey, we ought to get an ocelot.
On campus, a welcome party for first-year law students is in full swing. Mark and Gordon walk about.
So, Gordon, may I tell me, what do you think?
I think I'm in paradise. I mean, look, these women, they're brilliant, ambitious, cultured, each one with the intellectual capacity to...
Gordon stops and points.
She's not wearing a sweatshirt.
Behind them...
Ten black guys and one white guy. What do you call the white guy?
I don't know.
Quarterback. You got 1,000 black guys and one white guy. What do you call the white guy?
I give up. Gordon!
The two jokers notice Mark.
Sorry. Look, no offense, really. Just a joke.
Hey, no problem.
The jokers leave.
Funny guys. I like them.
What are you gonna do? So what's the plan? I say we divide and conquer.
Well, let's see. Why don't you take the ones with undergarments and I'll take the ones without? We gotta use some system.
They clink their drinking glasses. As Gordon heads off, Mark looks around. He notices a pretty black student. When she notices him, he smiles. She smiles back, then comes over.
Hi, I'm Sarah Walker.
Mark Watson. Can I get you anything? Cheese, punch, a new car?
No, thank you. I just want to let you know that the first BLSA meeting is this Thursday in Hastings Hall. Will you be there?
It's a date.
No, it's not.
Smiling, she leaves. At registration...
I love the law. I love being black. I love this woman. Oh, God, is she beautiful? You gotta believe me.
I believe you.
Oh, and she is incredibly attracted to me.
Right. I want to believe.
Mark notices a black professor registering students for the criminal law course.
Hey, Gordo.
I think I just changed my mind. I'm taking criminal law.
What? I thought we decided not to take that until next semester.
That's before I found out the prof was a brother.
At the first class.
Mr. Van Dusen.
Here.
Miss Walker.
Here.
Mr. Watson.
Right on.
The professor looks quizzically at Mark, who is sitting next to Sarah, the black girl from the party.
Mr. Wazanski.
Present, sir.
Miss Zendel.
Mark turns to Sarah.
You know, the minute I saw you, I knew we were both W's. God, I just love sitting in alphabetical order, don't you?
More than life itself.
God!
Before I discuss the contents of this course, I would like to make a few things clear. Some of you may have had easy lives up until now. Some of you may not. Life this semester is not going to be easy for any of you. Your grades in the first year of law school can determine your entire future in the law. To do well in this course, you must be fully prepared for each class meeting, and all written work must be on time. No excuses. I repeat, no excuses will be accepted for failure to complete all tasks assigned in the time allotted.
That's what he tells his wife when they go to bed.
The professor turns toward Mark.
Do you have something to say, Mr. Watson?
Well, sir, to be honest, I just couldn't help murmuring my approval of your opening remarks. Very impressive, sir.
Try to contain your enthusiasm in the future, Mr. Watson.
Please, call me Mark.
Bewildered, the professor heads for the blackboard. After class...
You know, if you ever need any help with your homework...
Mark walks down the hall with Sarah.
You want to talk? Personal problems? Anything. Anything at all. I'm there for you.
I'll keep it in mind.
As she walks off, he admires her.
What an ass.
What an asshole.
Mark barges into the flat, eating a banana.
Hey, Gordo?
Yeah?
What's this BLSA?
BLSA? That's the Black Law Students Association.
Gordon dips the banana in coffee.
I think it's like, you know, a real militant group.
Mark ponders. Wearing camouflage pants, a black turtleneck, beret, and sunglasses, Mark strides down a corridor to the BLSA meeting. When he walks into the meeting room, the black students are taken aback.
Somebody here call a cab.
Mark returns to the flat. Gordon gives him the once-over.
You are really unbelievable.
You said they were a militant group. Now I've blown it with Sarah.
Gordon notices something out the window.
Hey, Mark, check it out.
I told you she liked me.
Mark and Gordon watch Mr. Dunbar and the young brunette move some furniture into the house. They run to a mirror. Gordon combs his hair.
The length a woman will go to get to me. Sometimes even I can hardly believe it.
Hey, maybe she likes me.
Mussing Gordon's hair. Mark runs out and down the front steps to the street. The brunette strolls up to him.
Hi there.
Hi. Remember me?
Remember you? Are you kidding? I had your face embroidered on my pillow. What's your name?
Whitney, what's yours?
Hi.
Gordon Bloomfield. Of the Marina Del Rey Bloomfields? Can we help you move anything in?
Thank you. That won't be necessary.
Mr. Dunbar escorts Whitney up the steps to the front door.
Well, Whitney, I want you to stay away from him.
Why, because he's black?
No, because I say so.
At basketball practice, the one black player sinks a difficult hook shot.
Let's see that.
Let's
see that. Oh!
Mark and Gordon walk across the gym to a couple of coaches.
This is where we sign up?
Mm-hmm.
Name's Mark Watson.
Okie dokie, why don't we just take Mark on our team and you can have...
Gordon Bloomfield.
No, why don't you guys take Gordon and we'll take Mark.
Oh, well, you know, look, I wrote it down this way and I know the way you hate a messy team list, so...
Come on, Ernie, you guys got Leon, you get Marcus.
That's Mark. Look, guys, I'm really not that good or anything.
Well, there you go. He's not really that good. So why don't we take him? Because, in all fairness, we may have the stronger team here.
Listen, scumbag.
Guys, look, I'm not that good.
Have you played before?
Well, on the playground.
The coaches fight over the team list.
Hey, don't start.
Leave this to live all
day. All right, let's go, Cody. Don't start.
Waiting for this.
Oh, it's Cynthia. Right here.
Soon after, Mark huddles with his team.
Okay, Fillmore, you can take Matthews. We got Washington here on the coin toss, so he'll take Leon.
That's Watson.
Right. Sorry, Marcus. Okay, let's go.
All right, let's go.
A player passes the ball to Mark. He dribbles, but Leon knocks the ball between his legs and takes possession. Mark catches the ball and makes a fast break. He shoots, but the ball ricochets off the rim and hits him on the head. Mark covers Leon, who has the ball. Leon passes the ball behind his back to his teammates. As Mark wonders what happened, Leon's teammate scores. Now Mark has the ball and Leon plays defense. Attempting Leon's move, Mark passes the ball behind his back and right into Leon's hands. Frustrated, Mark's coach stands with his hands on his hips.
Be sure, honey. Hey, don't you fret. 'Cause you ain't seen nothing yet.
Leon attempts a skyhook and sinks the ball.
I'm a soul man. I'm a soul man.
Mark attempts the same shot and sends the ball into the rafters.
Look, I was brought up on a side street.
Exasperated, the coach gives Mark a dirty look.
Hey, I was educated from good start.
Leon squirts water from a plastic bottle into his mouth. Mark squirts water into his eye. From right under the basket, Leon jumps up and dunks the ball. Mark tries it and embeds the ball between the rim and the board. When Leon tries a shot, Mark grabs his arm. When the referee calls a foul, Mark points at him.
Yeah.
Leon dribbles back and forth between his legs as Mark tries to grab the ball. Then Leon jumps up, shoots, and scores. When Mark tries to dribble between his legs, the ball whacks him in the crotch. And he collapses onto the court. Back in class.
Miss Zindel, can you cite for us the precedent for that decision?
Yes, sir. Well, actually, what I mean is that... No, sir, I can't.
She starts crying.
Mr. Lisinski.
Yes, sir, I believe I can. It was the 1972 case of Oklahoma versus Powell.
Very authoritatively stated, Mr. Lisinski, and very wrong. Mr. Watson, can you name the precedent for us?
Yes, sir. The precedent, sir, is Ronald Reagan, sir.
Mr. Watson, I am not a humorless man. But if you're going to take up my class time making jokes, please see to it that they are funny. Miss Walker?
Rhode Island versus Calitano.
What year, Miss Walker?
1969, sir.
Anyone else here agree with Miss Walker's citation?
No one raises their hand.
That's unfortunate. It happens to be correct.
Outside, after class.
Hey, Sarah. That was really good in there. I was impressed.
Thanks.
Listen, I was just wondering if... You know, maybe you'd like to get together sometime.
And do what? Storm the administration building? Maybe take a few hostages?
Sure. Or we could just stay at home and phone in a few bomb threats if you'd rather. Listen, about that BLSA thing. I'm really sorry, you know. I wasn't trying to make fun of it or anything. I was just trying to make an impression.
You did. You know, there's something really strange about you, and I don't know what it is.
You see, I knew you'd like me once you got to know me. Come on, why don't you let me buy you dinner sometime? You gotta eat, right?
Mark, this is Harvard. I don't have to eat, I don't have to sleep, I just have to study.
Okay, so let's study together. I could drill you. Quiz you. Come on, I'm serious about this. You know, I know you don't need the help, but I could really use it. What do you say, my place tonight?
I can't tonight. Friday, in the library.
You want to study on a Friday night? Okay. Friday night. 8:00, second floor lounge. It's a date.
No, it's an appointment.
She turns and leaves.
Okay, it's an appointment.
You met her at the laundromat.
Mark and Gordon stroll down a corridor.
But we did share a dryer. Gentle cycle, low heat. We just sat together and watched our clothes rolling around on top of one another. I think it stirred something in both of us. You know, I got a study date with Sarah Friday night. I'm thinking about growing some dreads.
She'll let me put my hand inside her blouse. That wasn't the one she was wearing, of course, but it's a start.
Lisa and Brad come in behind the guys.
Get my car, be a Gordon? Gordon, Bluefish, is that you?
It can't be. Just keep walking.
Shit.
Yeah, don't say anything, then she might recognize
Gordon?
Your voice.
Gordon? Gordon, Bluefish! Gordon!
Gordon stops and turns around.
Oh, it is so good to see you. Why haven't you called us?
Hi, Lisa.
Hi.
Brad.
Mark whips on sunglasses.
Hi, I'm Lisa Stimson, and this is Brad Small. Say hi, Brad.
Mark rolls his head around like Stevie Wonder.
Do you go to Harvard, too? It's a great school, isn't it? Just the best?
She leans over to Gordon.
What?
No, he's just dumb. Completely dumb. And a little deaf. You're going to have to speak up. Hey! This is Brad and Lisa. I'd like you to meet my good friend, Kareem. Kareem Abdul-Ali.
Nice to meet you, Kareem! Is he a Muslim?
No, he's Canadian.
Oh, no kidding. Does Kareem go to Harvard, too?
No, he works. He's looking for work. He was Mountie up in Canada, don't you know? So it's been an uphill battle. There's so little for Mounties in Boston. If you hear of anything.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We'll keep our eyes open. So, Gordy, how's Mark? You know, Brad may be going here next year. We just checked in up at admissions, and they told us that he is at the top of the transfer wait list.
Oh, that's great, Brad.
Yeah, just one person drops out of your class or gets kicked out, and I'm in. You know, he looks familiar.
Oh, but you know, he's a common physical type. Look, it was really great to see the two of you like this, but, we gotta go. Come on, Kareem, you don't want to be late. He's got a meeting with the park police at 2:00. He's interviewing with some of their top horses.
Well, bye-bye. Let's get together real soon.
Gordon escorts Mark out the door. Mark removes his sunglasses.
I think you handled that very well. Thank you.
In the flat, Mark studies.
Come on in.
Hi.
Whitney stands in the doorway.
Do you think you could help me change the washer on my shower? I can't find Mr. McGrady anywhere.
Moments later, in her bathroom.
So you go to Radcliffe. Very impressive. What's your major?
Political science. Honors. Of course, but what does that really mean anyway? It's all such a game. I'm writing my senior thesis on the American Civil Rights Movement. What?
No, it's... This is just such an incredible coincidence. I happen to love civil rights. God.
Really?
In her bedroom.
That was incredible, Mark.
On the floor, beside a rumpled bed, Mark and Whitney lie naked under a sheet.
I mean, it was like I could really feel 400 years of oppression and anger in every pelvic thrust. I hope you don't mind if I use bits of this interlude in a short story I'm working on.
Well...
Wait, it's called Shades of Gray. Because, you know, I really don't feel like there's any black and white. Only shades of gray. Well, like the stereotypes about black men. Some of them are true. Like the breast thing. And, well, you really are very dynamic sexually. But then, of course, some of the stereotypes are completely untrue.
Yeah, like what?
Like the one about penis size. I'll tell you what. I'm having dinner with my parents tonight. Why don't you come with me? I'd love for them to meet you.
Tonight, I don't...
Wait. Before you say no, let me tell you what's for dessert.
She slips under the covers. At the Dunbar house that evening, a black servant carries a tray of tarts around the dinner table. As he serves a tart to a little boy, the servant and Mark exchange glances. The servant sets a tart in front of Mr. Dunbar. He hands a tart to Whitney.
Thank you.
Mrs. Dunbar takes a bite of her tart and licks her lips. She turns to Mark.
Raspberry tart, Mark?
Oh, no, thank you. I really couldn't eat another bite.
Mrs. Dunbar imagines Mark as a jungle savage.
All my life, I've only been able to think about one thing. White women! And now, at last, I'm going to have one!
Snapping out of it, she turns to the little boy who is watching a black singer on TV.
Bundy Dunbar, how many times have I asked you not to watch that thing at the dinner table?
Removing his headphones, Bundy imagines Mark as Prince. The real Mark sits awkwardly at the table beside Whitney.
Daddy, did I tell you Mark's going to Harvard Law School on scholarship?
Mr. Dunbar imagines Mark as a pimp.
Don't get my heroin in my hypodermic needle, bitch. Give me some more watermelon while you're at it.
Yes, dear.
White, fat ass slut. What you looking at?
Mr. Dunbar stabs his fork into his raspberry tart. Meanwhile, Sarah waits for Mark in the second floor lounge of the library. Fed up, she packs her books into her satchel. In the flat, Gordon is studying when Mark comes home.
Hi. Oh, Sarah called a couple hours ago. Sounded sort of pissed.
Oh, shit.
Next day in class.
You will see on your syllabus that your first major written assignment is due the Wednesday before Thanksgiving.
When previous assignments are handed back, Sarah notices that she got an A minus.
Those of you whose performance so far has been less than...
She passes Mark his C plus paper.
Might try to do a particularly good job.
As the students leave the classroom, Mark turns to Sarah.
Sarah, I'm really sorry. Something came up. Can we study tonight?
No. I think you just better drill yourself.
She gets up and leaves in a huff. At the cafeteria.
Mark, I understand what you're feeling. But honestly, I think we just need to talk this thing through.
Whitney comes in with Mark.
I mean, we don't have any problems sexually, right?
Mark turns to her, then to the server behind the counter.
Excuse me, miss, but do you have any of that jello salad with the little marshmallows in it?
The server turns around. Mark is stunned to see it's Sarah.
Oh, I'm so sorry. We're out of that right now.
As she heads for the kitchen, Mark sighs. In the library stacks.
How many black electricians does it take to screw in a light bulb?
I give up.
Two. One to hold the light bulb and the other one to drive the pink Cadillac.
Removing a book from a shelf, Mark stares at the two jokers.
Hey, guy. Sorry, really. No offense, right? Just a little joke?
Don't worry about it.
As Mark stiffens, the jokers shrug. Next day, Mark drives his Jeep around Cambridge. A police car tails him. Mark notices the police car in his rearview mirror. He notes the speed limit is 25 miles per hour. He's only going 20 miles per hour. Mark stops at a stop sign and signals left. When he turns left into the intersection, the police car follows him. Mark approaches a stoplight, which turns red. He stops and signals right. Worried, Mark looks out the rear window at the police car. When the light turns green, Mark makes a right onto the main street. The police car follows him.
Jesus Christ!
Ahead, the door of a parked car swings open. Mark swerves to miss it.
What the hell did I do?
You changed lanes without signaling. Let's see your license and registration. If you haven't lost it.
I haven't lost it.
Mark reaches for the registration and hands it to the policeman. When he digs out his wallet, he realizes that his license has his photo before he turned dark.
All right, so I lost it. There's no law against that. Look, I really don't have time for this. I have a very important assignment due tomorrow. Okay, so I misplaced my license. What the hell are you gonna do, arrest me?
As a cell door slams shut and the warden leaves, Mark turns to face his fellow cellmates. 9 big white ball players.
Hi there. Good game?
We lost.
Gee, that's too bad.
The players close in on Mark.
To a bunch of niggers.
Next day, Mark runs down the college corridor and crashes into a garbage can. In the classroom...
But this, of course, raises the question of criminal intent.
Wearing torn clothes, Mark opens the classroom door.
I see you decided to come in native costume today.
If you've had some sort of accident, Mr. Watson, perhaps you should have taken the entire day off.
Oh, I'm fine. I just got in sort of a fight. I mean, it wasn't my fault. You see, they threw me in this cell with these real ass... Some extremely unsportsmanlike fellows.
I dislike interruptions in my class, Mr. Watson. Try to remember that if you can.
Yes, sir.
Mark takes a seat next to Sarah. Wyszanski regards him with disdain.
Please leave your assignments with me before you go.
The students fall out.
Watson, I don't believe I have your paper.
Mark approaches the professor.
Look, professor, with all due respect, sir, I just spent 18 hours in a jail cell on no formal charges, getting pulverized by drunken bigots. And you expect me to come
down
here?
I said there would be no excuses for late work, and I meant no excuses. A judge and jury won't give a damn if you've had a bad day before a trial.
I would think you could understand.
You'll get no special treatment from me, Mr. Watson. Do you hear me? No special treatment. And if that means you've got to work twice as hard as these little white shits, then you damn well better work twice as hard. I understand you are allowed one phone call from jail.
He writes on a piece of paper.
Yes, sir.
Next time you get arrested, use it to call me.
He hands the paper to Mark.
I'll bring you your books. You can study in jail if you have to. You understand me?
Yes, sir.
Now you have that paper on my desk by 9 tomorrow morning.
Yes, sir.
Mark starts to leave.
Oh, Mr. Watson.
Mark stops and turns.
Have a nice Thanksgiving.
Cold, empty bed.
That night, Mark tries to eat a turkey TV dinner.
Feel like old Ned. Wished I was dead. What did I do to be so black and blue?
He gives up and continues work on his paper.
Ran from my house. They laugh at you. Scorn you too. What did I do to be so black and blue?
At dawn, he's still at it.
I'm white inside.
He pulls the last page from the typewriter.
That don't help my case.
The professor reads Mark's assignment.
'Cause I can't hide what is in my
impressed, the professor nods. Mark trudges down a street.
How would it end? Ain't got a friend. Only sin is in my skin. What did I do to be so black and blue?
When he gets into a crowded elevator, an old lady clutches her purse. He stays up nights studying in the flat. Late one evening, as he prepares to leave the library, he notices Sarah asleep at a desk. Next day in class, Mark raises his hand to answer a question. Sarah slips into class and sits down beside him.
To be so black and blue.
In the cafeteria, Mark carries his tray to a table and sits down. In the chair beside him is a little black boy who is resting his head on his arms. The boy lifts his head. Mark turns to him.
So, you go to Harvard?
I go to Eleanor Roosevelt.
Eleanor Roosevelt? Good school.
The boy smiles.
My name's Mark Watson. What's yours?
George Walker.
Mark's smile fades. Sarah comes over to the table.
Sarah.
Hi.
I didn't know you had a...
Yeah.
I mean...
Come on, George, it's getting crowded. You gotta go sit in the back.
Picking up George's milk and jacket, she leads her son away. As Mark waves goodbye to the little boy, the two jokers come in.
Why did the Negro wear a tux on his way to his vasectomy?
Why? Because if I'm gonna be impotent, I might as well look impotent.
They notice Mark at the next table.
Hey, no offense, right, pal?
Mark glares at them. In class...
There are a number of cases exemplary of this phenomenon. Miss Walker, could you cite one for us?
Caught off guard, Sarah leafs through her notes. Mark jumps up.
Sir, I believe that was the 1979 case of
Mr.
New York...
Mr. Watson, if this were a court of law, you would be cited for contempt.
Well, I would never do that in a court, sir. Not that I don't have the same respect for you.
You may shut up now, Mr. Watson.
Thank you, sir.
Mark sits down.
Miss Walker, perhaps you could complete the case citation that your irrepressible colleague so ably began.
No, sir. I can't.
Later.
Don't apologize to me. Just remember, the final is less than 2 weeks away. You're going to need an A if you hope to bring your grade for the semester up to an acceptable level.
Mark waits for Sarah in the corridor. Sarah hurries out of the building.
Sarah, wait a second. Sarah!
Mark runs after her.
Sarah, wait a second.
Oh, just leave me alone.
I'm sorry. Listen, I just wanted
to... Don't you think I've had enough humiliation for one day?
No! I mean, I don't think you should feel humiliated.
Don't patronize me.
I'm not, Sarah. Sarah, listen to me. You know, you're the smartest person in that class. You just have too much to do. You're working twice as hard as everybody else.
Looks like I'm not working hard enough.
Well, Jesus, you just don't have enough time.
Exactly. And the last thing I have time for is you. As she starts off, he grabs her.
Look, I don't want to be a pain in the ass here, but I just want to say that the offer still stands to study together. You know, we both need this final to pull our grades up. We still have 10 days.
She brushes past him.
I'll be in the library at 7 o'clock if you're interested.
That evening, Mark studies in the library. Sarah's satchel plops on his desk.
All right, New York versus Rottenberg, 1979. What was the relevant passage of the judge's decision? Don't smile at me. I'm not afraid
of letting go. There you go.
Mark and Sarah study long hours in the library. I'm not afraid to stand alone if that's the way it has to be. Eventually, Mark falls asleep. After all that I've been through, Sarah taps him awake. There's magic when I'm here with you. I feel so free. Next day, they study and debate in the cafeteria. Having you next to me. Distracts the librarian, Mark sneaks in 2 cups of coffee.
I've got to go. George is running a fever and I want to see him before he goes to bed.
Well, let me drive.
It's okay, I can take a bus.
Sarah, don't be a martyr.
I'm not a martyr. I've just seen the way you drive.
Sarah drives his Jeep. She looks at him, bursts out laughing. They drive through a poor neighborhood and stop at a modest house.
Grandma and Grandpa Walker, this is my friend, Mark Watson.
Glad to know you,
Hi,
Mom.
Mark.
How do you do? Sarah, here's a letter from your mom and your dad. Come in this morning.
Oh, Grandpa, thank you. I'll open it later.
Mark, you know that son of ours is just so proud of this girl here. He writes to her every week just to let her know how smart she is. And I think it's just about going to her head.
I'll bet Mark's people are pretty proud of him, too.
Yeah, I bet they are. I bet they are, too.
In his room, George lies in bed playing with his toys.
Me, cool, and Mark would destroy you. More circuits are damaged.
Sarah comes in.
So what do you mean you want to watch Johnny Carson, huh?
Sandra Wachowski gets to.
Well, George Walker goes to bed at 8:30, and that's that. Okay?
Okay.
So are you warm enough?
Yeah, I'm warm enough.
All right, precious. Good night.
She heads for the door.
Joan Rivers is hosting.
Joan Rivers?
Sarah dives on the bed and tickles George.
You know about Joan Rivers? Oh, where do you get these things? Oh, Georgie. All right.
She joins Mark in the doorway.
Okay. Good night.
Good night.
In the kitchen.
So George and I are at the checkout counter. And the girl goes, if you have food stamps, I need to see them first. Then I look at her. I say, oh, and what if I have an American Express gold card?
You have an American Express gold card?
Yes, in the glove compartment of my Lamborghini.
She laughs sardonically.
So how long were you married?
2 years. I don't know. I guess we got married too young. But how could I regret it? I wouldn't have George.
He's a great kid.
He really keeps me going. I would never have had the courage to apply to law school if it weren't for him. I want to give him everything.
You'll spoil him rotten.
Give him half a chance. So what about you? Any great romances in your past?
Not really. I guess I just haven't gotten that serious about any of the girls I've had appointments with.
Oh. What about the girl by the Jell-O salad? She sounded pretty serious to me.
Whitney? Oh, God. No, no way. That's history.
Oh, look.
She goes to the window.
It's snowing.
She and Mark step outside. She slips and falls.
Are you okay?
Yeah.
Mark helps her up. They both smile. As they move closer together, their lips touch. Sighing, Sarah admires the snowflakes.
You think you've never seen it snow before?
I haven't. I've seen it on mountaintops. I'm from San Diego.
Really? I'm from L.A.
You are?
Yeah.
Then you're the one.
Which one?
The one who stole my scholarship, the Bouchard scholarship. I was next in line for that.
But they told me there were no other applicants.
From Los Angeles. But if no one in L.A. qualified, they open it statewide. I checked 2 days before the deadline and nobody had applied, so I thought I had it in the bag. And then you pop up and steal it right from under me.
I didn't know.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to make you feel bad. I'm glad it was you. Look at you. You're turning white.
Snow covers Mark's afro. At the flat next morning, Mark paces in the kitchen while Gordon eats breakfast.
Come on, Mark. Give yourself a break. You didn't know.
It doesn't matter. I still had no right to take that scholarship. It's wrong. It's immoral.
Well, of course it is.
Of course it is? Well, then why the hell didn't you stop me?
Golden rule, I guess. Certainly wouldn't want you interfering every time I did something immoral.
Mark heads for the door.
Oh, where are you going?
Turn myself in.
What? Mark, wait a minute. What are you talking about?
Mark runs out and down the front steps to the street. As he gets into his Jeep, Gordon runs out the front door.
Wait a minute, Mark! Mark, what are you doing? Mark, don't do this! Mark, come on, listen to me! Are you crazy?
Mark drives off, leaving Gordon on the sidewalk in his underpants. Gordon notices Roy standing at the front door.
Went off without his earmuffs again.
In a college corridor.
Ah, how fortuitous, Mr. Watson. Do you have a moment? There is something I need to discuss with you.
Behind them.
Don't worry, Bradley. It's a long semester. Somebody will probably flunk out. Or die. Or something.
Hey, look at this.
What?
Brad and Lisa notice a wall plaque for the Bouchard Memorial Scholarship with Mark's name on it. In the professor's office.
Watson, all ethical or disciplinary problems within the law school are handled by a body known as the Student Faculty Judiciary Committee. Cheating, plagiarism, any sort of dishonest or inappropriate behavior. Perhaps you were aware that I serve as chairman on that committee.
No, sir.
The Judiciary Committee is called upon to make some difficult decisions. It can be an unpleasant responsibility. Periodically, we're called upon to recommend punitive actions against a student.
Punitive actions, sir?
Suspension. In some cases, expulsion. In fact, last year,
Our judgment on a case actually led one student to file civil suit against a fellow student. The suit was proved financially devastating to the guilty party.
Devastating?
Yes.
I see.
And in another instance, our findings obliged us to file criminal charges against a student who was convicted of felony fraud and was sentenced to serve 5 years in the state penitentiary. His reputation and future were, of course, utterly destroyed.
Of course. Utterly.
Mr. Watson, an unfortunate situation has come to my attention, one that is of particular concern to the black students here at the law school.
Look, Professor, I know what you're getting at. I swear to God, I was going to come talk to you about this myself.
Good. You would have my recommendation.
Your recommendation?
You would need a faculty recommendation if you want to apply for the seat on the committee.
Oh.
We'd like to maintain the current level of black representation on the committee, so naturally we were concerned when we learned that our only black student member was taking a leave of absence.
Well,
I've been extremely impressed by the way your work has improved over the course of the semester. I think you'll do a good job.
He extends his hand.
Thank you, sir.
Mark shakes the professor's hand. He starts to leave, then stops and turns around.
Is there something else you wish to discuss with me, Mr. Watson?
No, sir. No, sir, that'd be it. Thank you.
Mark heads out of Professor Banks' office and down the corridor. Suddenly he stops and whips on his sunglasses.
Hi, Kareem, how are you?
Mark rolls his head like Stevie Wonder.
Oh, sorry, I guess you can't, say hi to Gordon for us!
Smiling and swaying, Mark makes gestures with his hands. Then he walks off.
You know sign language, what did he say?
Well, I could be getting a little rusty, but I swear he said, your nose is happy like the moon.
When Mark returns to the flat, Gordon jumps up.
What happened? Did you tell Banks?
No, I didn't. Oh, I chickened out. You know, Gordo, I could probably go to jail for this.
Well, of course you could go to jail for this.
What do you mean, of course I could go to...
Never mind.
Gordon, tell me what to do.
Go to your room.
What?
Just go over there, open the door, and look in your room.
Opening the door, Mark discovers Whitney on the bed in her underwear. He returns to Gordon.
Jesus Christ, what'd you let her in here for? Sarah's coming over here to study. She'll be here any minute.
Golden rule again. I certainly wouldn't want you interfering if there were a beautiful, half-naked girl curled up on my bed.
Oh, God. Oh, God. Okay.
Mark?
What?
Promise me you wouldn't interfere if there were a beautiful, half-naked girl curled up on my bed.
Mark goes to his room.
Hi. Hi, Mark.
Whitney, what are you doing here?
Finding out if there's any hope for the world.
What?
Oh, seriously, Mark. I mean, gosh, if two young, intelligent, sexually compatible people can't work out their differences, what hope is there for lasting world peace?
Who gives a shit? Whitney, you gotta get out of here.
Mark! Mark, Mark, please, please, at least give me a chance. Believe me, I understand what your people have been through.
You have no idea what my people have been through. What am I saying? Okay, look. Stay here. Don't go out of this room.
Okay.
Throwing a blanket over her, he runs out the door.
Don't open that.
Why not?
It's Sarah. Wait a minute. Let me think. What can I tell her?
What? Don't tell her anything.
But I already told her.
What, that you're white?
No, that I'm not seeing Whitney.
Well, does Whitney know you're white?
No, I gotta get rid of her.
Well, how are you gonna get rid of her?
I'll tell her I'm white.
No, don't tell her you're white.
You're right. I can't tell her I'm white. What am I gonna tell her?
Wait a minute. You need to think.
Let me think.
Mark, why don't you let us in?
It's your parents.
Oh, God.
Mark?
Okay. 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 They can't see me like this. Stall them.
Gordon goes to the closed door.
So, Mr. and Mrs. Watson, how do you find Boston? A lot of people compare it to a European city, but that's so stupid. I mean, all the signs are in English.
In Mark's room.
Would you please get dressed?
He pulls a blouse over Whitney's head. Running to the dresser, he rifles through the drawers.
I've always said, and you can check my record on this, that if everyone learned to speak English, there'd be a lot fewer wars.
The Watsons open the door and walk in.
Shut up, Gordon.
Yes, sir, you bet.
Where the hell is Mark?
Well, I tell you, sir, I know a few Marks. Can you give me a little more to go on?
Mark comes in wearing a ski mask and gloves.
Mom, Dad, tell me, what brings you to this wintry part of the country?
Well, we decided to stop over on our way back from Barbados. Mark, what are you doing with that thing on your head?
This?
Yes.
Germs. Filthy bacteria. My mucous membranes are infested with them. You know, scientists now believe that a simple ski mask can stop the senseless spread of disease.
Harvard scientists.
I want to see my baby's face.
Oh, no, Mom. You say that, but believe me, you don't mean it.
We would like to talk to you, Mark. Openly, honestly, privately.
Your father's therapist thinks that he may have moved out of his integrity life phase and into generativity.
Shut up, Dorothy. Mark, could we go...
I tell you what, why don't the three of us go out for a little drink? Second thought, why don't we go...
As Mark steers his folks into the kitchen, Gordon answers the door.
Hi, Sarah.
He slams the door in her face, then reopens it.
Hi, Sarah.
Hi.
She comes
Hi.
In.
How are you?
Fine. Where's Mark?
Mark's, what's the phrase I'm looking for? Not here. That's it. Not here. Mark's not here.
Mark bursts out of the kitchen.
Hi, Sarah. You ready to go to the library?
The library? I thought we were going to study here.
I changed my mind. Studying here makes me so... sleepy.
Well, I gave Grandma the number here, and she's going to call me if George's fever goes up. How about if I make a pot of coffee?
No! I mean, hey, sit down.
He shoves her onto
Relax.
A chair.
Let me do the work.
He puts a ski mask back on and runs into the kitchen. Gordon turns to Sarah.
We're defrosting.
In Mark's room, Whitney ambles over to the stereo and sifts through some albums. In the kitchen...
Mark, what I'm trying to say is...
What your father means to say is, dear, that even though he seems like a real shithead sometimes, he loves you very much.
Oh, shut up, Dorothy. Mark!
Mark!
Who is that?
Mark?
Neighbors. Very thin walls.
Somebody yelled Mark.
Excuse me.
Mark runs out of the kitchen.
Mark, I was just wondering...
Puzzled, she looks at the closed door to his room.
Is that coming from your room?
That?
That.
Oh, that? That's my stereo. Automatic alarm timer. You see, I was taking a nap, and I especially picked this music so I'd be forced to get out of bed and turn it off. Pretty smart, huh? This is shit. These guys really suck.
Then I'll just go turn it on.
No!
What?
It's too messy in there. Right, Gordo? Almost beyond human...
Mark notices the kitchen door opening.
I think the water's boiling.
Forgetting to put on his ski mask, he barges into the kitchen.
Get back, Dorothy. I'll handle this. I'm warning you, I'm armed.
What's happening, brother? Get down! Get down! Looking good, Mama! Looking good! Well, I got to be going now.
He dashes out of the kitchen.
Did he have a knife? I think he had a knife.
In the living room.
Mark, what's going on?
Mark, I think she's on to you. You better tell her the truth.
Okay. The truth. Sarah, the truth is...
The truth is, Sarah, that Mark... just bought your Christmas present, and if you go into the room, you're going to see what it is. I'll tell you what. I'll go turn the music off. I already know what I'm getting.
As Gordon heads for Mark's room, Sarah smiles broadly.
I feel terrible. I haven't gotten you anything yet.
Please, don't feel terrible. It's nothing. Really. Nothing at all. But maybe I should go hide it. Just in case.
In Mark's room, Gordon takes Polaroids of Whitney.
Never have flashbulbs when you need them.
Could you just scoot over there by the window, sweetheart?
Mark comes in and opens the window.
Ooh, where are we going?
Picks up Whitney, carries her to the window, and deposits her on the fire escape. On the street below, Roy is taking out the garbage. He notices Whitney, half naked, on the landing above.
Holy chowder.
In the living room, Mark puts on his mask.
Yeah, why don't you just go check on that coffee?
I'm gonna go check on that coffee.
What was that?
What?
Mark,
Is there someone in the kitchen?
Is somebody in the kitchen?
His father pokes his head out the kitchen door.
No, nobody's in the kitchen.
It's okay, Dorothy.
Then who are these people?
These people? I don't know who these people are. How'd you get in my kitchen? What's the meaning of this?
What are you talking about, dear?
She turns to Sarah.
Hi. We're Mark's parents. I'm Dorothy Watson, and this is my husband, Bill. Mark?
Sarah, the truth is, these people are... These people are...
Obviously total lunatics. I've heard about this sort of thing. Older people are going insane with anxiety about their financial future, so they accost some promising young professional student and claim to be his parents. Apparently, it's just another result of these Reagan budget cuts. Now, I'm sorry, but while we agree with you philosophically, we can help you here. Try the mission.
Mark, can I speak to you in your room for a moment?
She pulls Mark into his room.
Please.
Gordon? So, how are the islands?
Downstairs, Roy dials a payphone.
Mr. Dunbar?
In Mark's room.
Mark, are you in trouble?
No, it's not that.
Well, you're obviously hiding more than a Christmas present in here. If you want me to leave, just tell me.
No, Sarah.
Just tell me the truth.
Sarah, I really care about you a lot. That's why I can't tell you the truth.
What are you talking about?
How do you feel about interracial relationships?
Pardon me?
Interracial relationships? You know, relationships between persons of different races.
Why are you asking me this?
The window opens.
Mark, I'm coming back in now. It's freezing out there.
Sarah stomps out of the room.
Sarah, wait a minute.
There he is
again.
You
don't understand.
Stand back.
Shut up, Dad.
Look, you don't owe me anything. You don't owe me any explanations.
Yes, I do, Sarah. Listen to me. There's nothing between Whitney and me. She just likes me because I'm black. I mean, because she thinks I'm black. I mean, when I got involved with her, I was really white on the inside, although I was black on the outside. But now a part of me is black on the inside, even though I'm white on the outside. I don't know. Maybe I'm sort of gray on the inside and the outside. Sarah, what I'm trying to say to you is, I'm actually white.
Oh, I see. And these people are actually your parents.
Right!
What?
Oh, yeah. Mom, Dad, there's something I have to tell you. I'm black.
No, you're crazy.
Sarah storms out. Mark goes after her.
Kids.
As Mr. Dunbar drives up, Sarah runs down the stairs with Mark right behind her. When Mr. Dunbar starts up the front steps, Sarah bursts out the front door.
Sarah, wait a sec!
She runs past Mr. Dunbar, who marches up the steps, and punches Mark in the gut. Upstairs, Mr. Watson has passed out. As Mrs. Watson tries to revive him, Mr. Dunbar packs Whitney into his car. Running down the stairs, Gordon finds Mark lying by the front door.
Nice. Oh, Marky. Broken bones?
No.
Internal bleeding?
Hard to say.
Guess that's why they call it internal bleeding.
Roy comes up the front steps and drops an eviction notice in Mark's lap.
Have a nice day, boys.
That night, Brad flips through a scholarship booklet. When he finds a reference to the Bouchard Memorial Award, he contemplates. Next day, students file into Professor Banks' class.
Please pick up your exam booklets at the door.
Sarah takes her seat beside Mark.
Sarah, listen. I just want to say...
She turns to face him.
Good luck.
Turning away, she taps her fingers.
Please begin.
The students open their booklets and start the exam.
There is question in the sky. Some of us are still gonna get by. Now everybody's got a dream. Some grand design, some crazy scheme. Still impossible. Just a feel to overcome.
12, Zendel anxiously checks the wall clock and gets back to work. Having finished early, Wysansky sits back, clasps his hands, and nods confidently at Zendel. Mark and Sarah write furiously. When Mark checks his watch, Wysansky regards him disparagingly.
Time.
After the exam, Sarah heads out of the building. Mark comes after her, then stops and watches her walk off. In the flat.
Come on, you can still get on standby.
I can't. I gotta stay here and figure out what I'm gonna do.
So what are you gonna do? Sorry, dumb question. I don't know, Gordon. I never thought all this would... I never thought I'd fall in love with her. Shit, I never thought about anything. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think I do. Maybe.
Sort of.
I guess you've been through a lot of stuff. Probably a lot of stuff I can't even imagine. Do you really hate the Beach Boys now?
It's hard to say.
I guess I still like some of their funkier stuff. Well, you better get out of here. Your plane's gonna leave.
Yeah, right.
Gordon puts on his hat and grabs his suitcase.
Merry Christmas.
You too.
Gordon heads out the door. Surrounded by cardboard boxes, Mark leans back in his chair.
What am I gonna do?
The door opens.
We're two brilliant young men. We've got energy, imagination, keen analytical minds.
Gordon throws off his coat and hat.
We'll think of something.
Mark smiles. Weeks later, the campus is covered in snow. In Professor Banks' classroom...
The Judiciary Committee will convene in 2 minutes.
The college is buzzing with students coming to the committee's special open hearing. The two jokers meet outside.
Hey, boy.
Hey, Barky.
How you been? How's your vacation?
Excellent.
Terrific.
So you going to the special hearing?
You kidding? I wouldn't miss this for the world.
Wonder what he did. My guess is he falsified his transcripts.
Wysansky and Zendel
cheated on his LSATs.
No, believe me, my interest in him is purely sociological.
Whitney comes in with an American Indian man. A student talks to the two basketball coaches.
It's hard to say. Nobody knows what he's done.
I got Travis Kelly down for expulsion of 6-1. Do you want some action or what?
Because, you know, I really don't feel like there's any red or white. Only shades of pink.
All be seated, please.
Sarah comes in.
If Mr. Watson will come forward, we can begin.
She sits at the back. Professor Banks scans the room.
It appears that Mr. Watson has reconsidered his decision.
I'd say this whole thing is an argument against these affirmative action scholarships.
Just a moment, Your Honor.
Gordon strides in.
Young man, I'm the chairman of a committee, not a judge.
Oh, right. Your chairness. I'm Gordon Blumfeld, Mr. Watson's chief counsel in this matter.
Are we to understand that Mr. Watson himself was not inclined to attend today?
Objection!
To what?
Well, frankly, to your tone of voice.
Quiet. Mr. Blumfeld, these proceedings are highly irregular as it is. If Mr. Watson will not come forward in person, we'll have to adjourn this hearing and conduct our own investigation.
My client is more than ready to come forward in person. First, First, he has asked that I make a few brief remarks on his behalf.
He snaps his suspenders and clasps his hands.
Mark feels that he has done a grave injustice in accepting the Henry Q. Bouchard Memorial Fellowship. His sole desire is to set the record straight and to make the fullest possible reparations for the damage he has done. First, to the individual who otherwise would have received those funds.
He points to Sarah.
But also to the institution whose trust he has forsaken. And last, but by no means least, to the society whose laws he has transgressed.
Professor Banks crosses his arms. Gordon marches to the center of the room and turns to the committee.
In thus coming forward, my client throws himself upon the mercy of this committee. But I ask you, before you pass judgment on him, I ask you to consider the mitigating circumstances surrounding his crime.
I hate this bleeding heart shit.
My client was in a position of dire financial need at the time he improperly accepted the Bouchard Fellowship. In his efforts to come by the money honestly, he encountered nothing but hostility and rejection at every turn. In fact, one could argue that it was the lack of understanding of my client's special needs on the part of the governmental, financial, and academic establishments that drove him to his crime. But it goes way beyond that, ladies and gentlemen. Yes, my client is a victim of society in a still deeper sense. After all, who made him what he is? Weak, greedy, unable to support himself by honest labor? Can we blame him for the environment in which he was raised? For the warped values which he learned from earliest childhood? For the people with whom he was surrounded? People who, as much as it pains me to say it, give daily evidence of underdeveloped intellect and deteriorating moral fiber? In short, can we blame him, ladies and gentlemen, for the color of his skin?
Gordon approaches Professor Banks until their noses meet.
I think not.
As the professor sits transfixed, Gordon turns back to the committee.
And I trust that this committee will find the heart, nay, the soul, to be lenient, and to share with me my hope that despite his race and upbringing, my client may yet become a useful member of society.
Gordon turns to the closed door at the back of the room.
Mark Watson. Come on down!
All heads turn. Mark enters in his natural skin color and hair. The professor is stunned. Sarah glances away.
No wonder.
No wonder.
No wonder.
I have important information for
Brad
this
bursts in.
I have pictures. I have proof. Mark Watson is actually...
He faces Mark.
White.
Sarah gets up and leaves. After the hearing, Mark sits in Professor Banks' office.
All right. I'm listening.
First of all, I'd like to pay Miss Walker the full amount of my grant, plus interest.
And?
And I'd like to volunteer one day a week during my school year and all of my summer vacations to legal aid work in the black community.
And
I'd like to have a contract drawn up, binding me to donate a fixed percentage of my annual income after law school towards the establishment of a scholarship in the name of Sarah Jane Walker.
And?
And I would like to get a law degree, sir, so I can do some work that might be of use to somebody.
You must have learned a great deal more than you bargained for through this experience, Mr. Watson.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Watson, a Harvard law graduate can do a great many things. Make a lot of money. Teach. Become a senator. A judge. A Harvard law graduate has power, Mr. Watson. I hope that I teach my students to use that power responsibly, even generously. But you've learned something that I can't teach them. You've learned what it feels like to be black.
No, sir.
Beg your pardon?
I don't really know what it feels like, sir. If I didn't like it, I could always get out. It's not the same, sir.
Mark bows his head.
You've learned a great deal more than I thought.
The professor reflects.
We won't press charges. You can stay.
Thank you, sir.
Jumping up, Mark shakes the professor's hand. George and Sarah sit at a table in the cafeteria. Sarah holds a sealed envelope containing her final results.
What do you think, George?
Go ahead.
She is about to open the envelope when she notices Mark working as a busboy. He comes over to her table.
Hi.
She looks at him guardedly, but George smiles.
Hi.
George, why don't you put something on the jukebox?
You look funny white.
Yeah? Well, green's my best color, but everybody stares.
George takes Sarah's coin over to the jukebox. Mark removes his apron.
Did you get my check?
Yes, thank you.
That's everything. That's all the money I got last semester, plus interest.
What did you do, fake a seizure and get a grant from the Heart Foundation?
I sold my car and stuff. My father finally agreed to give me a loan. 25% interest. But at least I can stay in school.
I'm happy for you, Mark, if you'll excuse me.
Sarah. I know how bad you needed that A on Bank's final. And I know how much it meant to you.
Fine. Want to know?
I'm sorry.
Oh, no. Let's find out. Did you flunk or did you pass? She got an A, okay? She got an A. Are you happy? Are you happy with yourself?
She smiles sheepishly and covers her mouth.
I got an A.
A minus.
That's not bad.
Mark sits down.
Guess I could have used a study partner. Sarah. You never answered my question. You know how you feel about interracial relationships.
She takes a deep breath, then shakes her head.
What? What were you gonna say?
I was going to say that I've never met a white man I was interested in. And that...
And then I guess the experience is just too different. Gotta go now, honey.
Getting up, she gathers her satchel and coat off a chair. As she and George head for the door, the two jokers come in.
Excuse me.
What do you call a black test tube, baby?
Jen, it's in a drow.
Mark gets up.
Hey, buddy.
How you doing?
Mark knocks one joker across the table and the other into some chairs. Sarah watches, astonished.
No offense.
Stunned and covered in food, the two jokers lie on the floor. Mark heads back to the kitchen. A short time later, Mark leaves the building. The door opens behind him.
Spot!
He whirls around to face Sarah and George.
But what?
But I guess it's all right. Interracial relationships. If two people really care about each other. Right, George?
Yep.
Yeah?
Yeah.
They smile at each other. She walks up to him.
Come on. George and I'll buy you dinner. Gotta eat, right?
He puts his arm around her.
Sarah, this is Harvard. I don't have to eat. I don't have to sleep. I just have to study.
They head across the campus.
I always thought I would be strong if I made it through the pain.
This described version of Soul Man was created by Audio Vision Canada. The narrative description was written by Ken Daw, narrated by Linda Chang, and produced by Valerie Hunter and Markel Sorin. For information on other described movies and audio cinema presentations available from Audio Vision Canada, call toll-free 1-800-567-6755. Cast: Mark, C. Thomas Howell. Sarah, Ray Dawn Chong. Gordon, Ari Gross. Professor Banks, James Earl Jones. Whitney, Melora Hardin. Mr. Dunbar, Leslie Nielsen. Mr. Watson, James B. Sicking. Dr. Aronson, Max Wright. Roy, Jeff Altman. Lisa, Julia Louis-Dreyfus. Brad, Mark Neely. The two jokers, Wally Ward and Eric Schiff. George, Jonathan Fudge Leonard. Copyright 1986.